Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing. And we have a beautiful guest today. Her name is Nambu, and she wrote this trilogy of books that are really her memoir, her autobiography about her life growing up as a mixed race child in an orphanage in Africa. And all of the beauty and the pain and the struggle that she experienced. And that's sort of in book number one. In book number two, she comes to America to study here and learn about, what it's like to be a person here. And then her final book, which is called Drumbeats, Heartbeats, is about her life, as she has family and matures and really brings her beautiful love of African art, dance, and music into the world in different ways. And her story is incredible. It's something that everyone should read, I think. And her storytelling is just so delicious and vivid and enjoyable. And I'm so happy to have you on the show today, Nambu. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you have really a remarkable story.
Yes.
What was it like, growing up in an orphanage in Tanzania?
Yeah, like I described, in Africa's child, it was at times traumatic, most of the time difficult, but sometimes it was fun also and good. The orphanage was started for children like me who were of mixed race and we were not wanted in the African society. And usually the white people, the white parents who fathered us or mothered us didn't want to have anything to do with us. So the African mothers would take us to the village, and even there we were discriminated against. So very often we were hidden and we might live and die without seeing the sun or the wind or the sky. I was so lucky I was not one of them, but word got out, that there was this order of German nuns, the Precious Blood Sisters. They were Catholic nuns from Germany who felt bad about the plight of the orphans, and they came and opened up an orphanage high in the Usambara Mountains for us. So word got around the entire country and even in other countries in Africa that there was a place for us now. And people came there from everywhere, of every age. Some were 20, some were 19, some 5, some 15, every age, boys and girls. I was brought there when I was only 3 days old. So the big girls, the older girls who were brought there, they took care of the little girls. And as far as I can remember, I was always a little girl. And they are the ones really very often who made our life very miserable. We were abused in every way you can imagine, physically, mentally, philosophically, spiritually, emotionally, sexually. It was all of that, going on all the time. The nuns tried their best, but some of them were extremely cruel also. Yet we, as mixed race children, it was our home, and it was a place that we were wanted. So for the most part, we were very, very grateful to have that place.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems, as difficult as it was, it seems like it was a better alternative than what happened to a lot of people where there was no place to go.
Yes, that's true.
So they named you Mary when you went there, yeah?
Yes, they named me Mary, and every other person had some derivative of the, generic Christian Catholic name, Mary, Maria, Marie, Miriam, Mariana. So we were all, I was plain old Mary, no last name, just Mary. Except I was fat,
You were fat. So you were Fat Mary.
So they called me Fat Mary, right.
And it's hard to believe looking at pictures of you now that you were ever fat, because you're, I think that your life took a different path when you, as an adult, but this, it's so touching. There's this point in Africa's Child, your first book, when you talk about how badly you wanted to find your mother, and you wanted somebody to love you, and you made a decision in that moment to love yourself. I think that was so powerful. It was like so amazing that even at that age you could do that. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, you know, people have asked me how I could do that at such an early age. You know, I was anywhere from 3 to 5. In the book, I say 5 because people don't believe me when I say 3, but I think I was 3 years old. You know, not everybody in the orphanage was an orphan. You know, like I said, people came from all over, but even though there were parents, and some parents were married and they were biracial, and they loved their children, their children were also discriminated in the society. So they brought their children there. But those children were really the haves, and the rest of us were the have-nots, so to speak. They went home for holidays, they got gifts, they got toys, they had family coming to visit all the time. You know, so I think I found out very early that no one was coming to visit me, and I really, really wanted my mother, and I couldn't figure out why she did not want me. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I have nobody who really loves me. The nuns take care of me, and I'm grateful, but I did not feel their love. So I think I came to the conclusion that if, you know, that there was nobody who loved me, and if I didn't love myself, I would die. So and I wanted to live. So I took this Fat Mary. I hated that name, you know. I just cried every time they called me that. But I took Fat Mary, that name, and I made Fat Mary my friend. Fat Mary became me, my twin. She was my counselor and my consoler. She was somebody I always went to talk to. She really was who I was. She was the part of me, the part of all of us, I think, humans, that we really do not see when you meet a person. You see their eyes, you see their hair, the clothes they wear, but we really don't see them, and we don't know them unless they let us in and tell us who they are.
Right.
Yeah. So Fat Mary really was my savior. She, you know, we solved all the problems. We analyzed everything. She gave me so much good advice, and I really felt that with her, I could not lose.
Yeah, there's a very spiritual, I think, quality. I mean, my work is to work as a psychic and a spiritual counselor, you know, and I feel like there's a very spiritual quality to your life and to your writing, you know, and your talk about talking to Baby Jesus and Baby Jesus talk back, and talking to Fat Mary, and sort of talking to the mother that you imagined you had. And I wonder, when I read it, I felt like, well, that's really happening. Like, it's not your imagination. That there's some, to me, it seemed like you have some deeper connection to the spiritual world. And when you were talking to this part of yourself, it's like talking to your higher self or your soul part of you.
I absolutely felt that way. I think I knew very early that there was more to me than my body. There was something there that made me unique, that I was not a piece of rock or a tree. They also do have their kind of own life, but I felt there was just something unique, and I felt as a child that someone, something, I did not know what, was always protecting me, and I decided that was the divine in me, that was what made us human beings. That what if you believe in God or whatever you believe in out there, it is that connection we have to the spiritual world, to the divine. And I always felt the divinity within me.
Yeah, it really comes through in your writing, you know, and it feels like you know that may be what. Even those very difficult parts of your childhood were way more difficult, I think, than many people have to deal with in their life, that there's sort of this feeling of faith. That's the word that comes to me when in reading your work, that even as a very small child, there was some, that feeling of the divine. And you knew in a way, even at that early age, that education was your way to a better life, right?
Yes, absolutely. Because I really didn't see myself. I didn't know where I was going, because I had no idea of the outside world in any shape or form. But I always knew I wanted to leave the orphanage. And I knew the education was how I would get out. We were educated only up to the fourth grade there. And then we had to stay there and become big girls and take care of their new orphans coming in. And I really did not want that for myself. When I was with St. Mary, I always envisioned a really big world. And I had no idea, you know. So I wanted to be educated, and I was lucky, you know, like in book two, I go to this all-African school, which was 200 miles away, my first time out of the orphanage, and it was quite traumatic. If you remember in the book, it was like going from the frying pan into the fire as far as being mistreated because of being biracial. But yeah. I survived it somehow because I believed in education. And it's just like you come to a point where you realize that I came to America to hear this statement, but I had always felt it, and I didn't quite put it as succinctly as they do it here. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Right. So I think as a child, I discovered that every obstacle I had, every hassle I had, I always felt better afterwards. I felt like now this next one is coming. Somebody might think it's insurmountable, but I just felt I could do it. And I became stronger and stronger, and I was able to pursue what I wanted, even though sometimes I was just going in the dark. I did not know what it was, but something was pulling me, telling me there was something better for me.
Mm-hmm. It sounds, you know, again, that theme that's a theme that's through all of your books is the sort of the joy, the amazingness, and the difficulty of being biracial. And I wonder if that's something you can't, you know, that's hard to understand unless you have to live through it.
Unless you live it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's just like, you know, in the same way, I really think I've met the most wonderful people all over the world, you know, Indian people, white people, all. But you really, I must say, you cannot know what it is to be black unless you live it. And and I like to, you know, people always ask me in America, have you been discriminated against? Have you suffered from racism? You know, it always hits me that whoever is asking the question, I have never had a black person ask me that question. Mm-hmm. All the time, there are people completely of other races, but mostly white people. And I know it is a sincere question, and they really care. But I also know that a black person knows. They would know what it is. So you really, sometimes you cannot feel it, and we can empathize because we're human. And from the emotional point of view, we really empathize, and we can feel everything, yet, You really don't quite know what it's like until you are living through it. And people live through many things that I might never know what it's like because I'm not them and I cannot experience it. But I just wanted to attempt to communicate, to explain, to open up to people so that they can see the possibilities of what happens when you are ostracized, when you're doing this and that you really, really can do it and you can try. I really always try to talk to people, to tell them exactly how I feel. If they will get it the way to the point, to the depth that I feel it, I don't know. But I feel as a human being, I want to share.
Yeah, it's such a powerful story. And, you know, and it there's so many layers to that. It part of the your experience, you know, and it was really like you were saying, the empathy. I was feeling such empathy for you living in Africa and not being able to really find a home with the black people or the white people and not having a place to go. I wondered if that was the same when you got to America.
Yeah, in America it took a different form. I didn't feel, you know, as mixed race, as, you know, because in Africa, they called us names, and anybody, once they called you that name, you knew right away it was a mixed person. So they had derogatory names for us and all. But when I came to America, it was a different kind of trying to fit in. In America, one of the hardest adjustments I had to make, apart from all the unbelievable cultural shock, was that I had to learn to become black. Because You know, I realized that the outside world was looking at me. When they see me, they saw a black person. Even though I was struggling, I was learning English, I was like a fish out of water. I didn't know if I was coming or going. I was confused all the time, you know. But I was supposed to be a black person, and if someone saw me, they knew everything about me. They at least they assumed they did, and they assumed I would act a certain way, I would say certain things. And in college, I remember when Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Was assassinated. We were discussing this in college, and people were frustrated because of the riots and everything else going around during the civil rights movement. And I can't tell you how often people, once in the discussion, students turned around to me. I was the only black person in a big class. They turned around to me and they said, "Well, what do you people want?" And I turned around also to look who the you people were, where they were sitting. And I found out I was you people. Mm-hmm. So that was really a turning point. I had to deal with it, because when in Rome, do as the Romans do, I wanted to fit in the American society. It was my dream to come over here. So I learned a lot about the African-American culture, which I knew almost nothing about. We were not taught even about slavery in Africa. We knew nothing. So it was really difficult for me, you know, to realize that I am supposed to be of this race or of this people, of this culture, when I didn't even know how to act, or all I knew was to be myself, and so much was expected of me. So I there's a chapter there, like I said, becoming black, which I managed to do. But yeah, the flip side of the coin was that finally I belonged. I was not just put someplace there and I was mixed. I was black now. I had all race behind me.
Well, I mean, it's so amazing. I mean, it's so interesting too. The things that you went through, I think, are so topical right now. It's something that's, you know, it's a lot. It would be so good for everyone to read your book and really understand, to see this whole conversation through your eyes. I just think we would all understand each other a lot better. And I hope that your book gets to a lot of people for that reason. And I could also feel a theme too in your book. It was very beautiful and very moving to me that you found African dance and art is to be a big part of your healing.
Absolutely. You know, because there's something about dance, you know, the way the Africans dance. To me, there was just no right way to dance. There was no wrong way. You just joined in, and the dance came from within you. And it was liberating. It was joyful. It was caring. It was social. There was something. I got almost a high even as a child, because we were forbidden to dance the pagan way. So we were told if we wanted to dance, we can learn the German waltz, which we did. But I used to sneak into the village and do the African dance. There's something that's spiritual about the African dance, which came from the place within me, you know, the spiritual place, the divine place that I could express, and gave me lots of comfort. And African art, when I look at African art, I can just feel the power of the person who did it, who whether it's a carving, whether it's a painting, I can feel the power and the history and the ancestors. I can just feel the power of the universe, because you know, in Africa, where people completely know and believe that we are part of the universe, we are part of everything. And when I look at African art, I just can feel that enormous belonging to something so magnificent as the universe.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's beautiful. And as you got older and more settled in your life, you journeyed back to Africa and actually found some of your family members there.
Yes, exactly. But you know, in book two, my mother comes to look for me, and it very, very much surprises me that my mother turns out to be white and to be an American, because my entire child, as you remember, you mentioned baby Jesus. I was always talking to baby Jesus, asking him to find my mother. So when my mother shows up when I'm 36, all of a sudden, I'm starting to understand why baby Jesus couldn't find her, because I was looking for a black mother, for an African mother.
Right.
So anyway, that's how I consoled myself and made excuses for baby Jesus. But But you know, but I have lived in that kind of innocence of religion, of just truly believing that baby Jesus was real and he can do anything. And we had all these conversations, you know, as you know. So I've got to find my mother, and she introduced me to my half brother, who was, you know, was also raised in Africa, but he was all white. His parents, you know, my mother and her husband, and they were missionaries in Africa at that time. And then my brother was older than me. After our mother passed, we decided to go to Africa to look for my father, because everything about me was African, everything. And especially after I met my mother, we had almost nothing in common. It was just like, I was so surprised.
It's so funny that, because there's this, you know, early in your first book, there's this time when you go into the African village and you talk to the village mothers. And you're like, which one is my mother? And they say, in this village, every mother mothers every child and will be your mother.
Exactly. And, you know, that again is one of the turning points in my life. You know, and these women who I went to the village, and these women were sitting around an earthenware pot, they were cooking, and they were old. They had white hair, you know, but I was 4, 5, 6, I had no idea. So I asked them individually, you know, are you my mother? They said nothing. They did nothing. They just looked at me. And in the end, when I asked the third one, well, then, are you my mother? All of them in unison said, we are all your mother. And that was another one of those moments where you feel your connectedness to other human beings and to the female spirit and to the universe. Right. And I have never forgotten that.
Yeah, there was something, and then when it turns out that your mother is a white American woman, there's something I remember that moment, and I felt like those village mothers were your mother. Like, even though your biological mother was a white American, that your real mother was like Africa.
Exactly. And I think that comes, you know, I'm not planning it, but as I'm writing, as I'm talking, I have always identified with this African woman to be my mother. And then, as you remember in book one, that image is this image, this woman, this African woman who was accompanying me as my plane was taking off. That was the mother I've always had. And she's the one I was looking for. But it's so funny. Many of those qualities that I had put in my African mother, my African father had, and my American mother did not. You know, I always felt the spirit, and I felt always African in my bones, no matter what I looked like. It didn't matter who called me what. I knew who I was. And even here in America, sometimes people have said to me, oh, are you really African? You know, I wanted to say, yeah, no, I'm faking, because everybody in their right mind wishes they were African. But especially when you hear all the things I said about us over here, you know. So I've been asked, and people have questioned me, but I absolutely know who I am, and people can call you everything. It doesn't change, you know, one thing. Yeah. But my father was just wonderful. He was like I said, he was everything that my mother wasn't. And I was so blessed to get to know him.
So, Nambu, sadly, we're almost out of time. I just wish we could talk all day, because it's so... love you and your work. But can you tell people how to get in touch with you?
Yes, I have a website, marianambu.com, which is just my name. And you can look at the website for information. And there's also, you can contact me there. There's an email address. And you can get my books from my website, or also from Amazon. They come in all the different forms. And I'm working now on the audio of America's Daughter. I have the audio also of Africa's Child, and of course the Kindle and the paperback. So those are all available. I also have another website called Aerobics with Soul, aerobicswithsoul.com. And there's lots of information about the dancing program that I developed that is based on African dance that I've been teaching for the last 30 years or so, and I've trained instructors. So it will tell you a lot about that aspect of my life, which was so important as I was growing up and kept me going and joyful.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I saw some of the videos on your website, and it made me want to dance with you. So I hope someday we can dance together, because I do love to dance
too. Yes.
Thank you, Nambu, so much for being on the show. Your story is amazing. Your books are amazing. I really hope everyone can get a chance to read it, because it's so important. Thank you for writing them.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I appreciate this.
Thank you. And thanks all of you guys for being with us here today. If you're looking for me, you can find me on my website, lisacampion.com. Come and check it out. I got some good stuff, lots of resources and free stuff there. And thanks again for being with us, both of us today here on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time right here on Empower Radio.